You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Well, hello there! This is Gary Gnu from the Great Space Coaster, and you and I are listening to the Flopcast! Yes, and let me tell you a little bit more about my career. Hey, wait, where are you going? Wait a minute, come back! Come back, I have more to tell you about myself. I'm really important. Really? Talk to me, please!
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 468.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello to our personal Pacific Princess Cornflake. Hi there.
Hi.
And guess who else is here for part two of our Love Boat flop fight? Returning is Dragon Con American Sci-Fi Classics track director Joe Crow.
Hey, what the heck? I've been waiting here for a week. In steerage.
Oh, no. Well, we had to have you back, Joe, for a part two of this thrilling flop fight involving Love Boat.
We should say Joe actually suited up for this. Joe is in the white formal Love Boat uniform with the cap. Very impressive. I'm assuming. We're not on camera right now.
Oh, no, I'm doing it.
Yeah. We would expect nothing less. Meanwhile, I'm in my Isaac red jacket, you know. I'll be tending the bar while you steer the ship. Cornflake's got the Julie or Vicky blue blazer and the clipboard.
Oh, I rock a blue blazer like nobody's business. And nobody has more clipboards than me. It's my jam.
Cameras are off. This is just a audio Zoom meeting. So we can, as far as the three of us know, we're all in costume. Perfect. Good job, everybody. So yeah, this is part two of our big Love Boat flop fight, and we will get into that in just a couple of minutes. First, Cornflake, let's do, once again, National Whatever Day.
National Whatever Day!
National Whatever Day this week, Joe and Kevin, calls for some sci and some fi, because it is going to be Alien Day on April 26th. As in the movie franchise, Aliens. The date is a reference to the moon on which Aliens is set, LV-426. So, other than the fact that Sigourney Weaver was in it for most of the movies, I don't know a whole lot about the Aliens movie franchise, but I do know a fair amount about Aliens, and I know you guys do too.
Yeah, you know, you've come to the right place.
Yeah.
Since we do have a sci-fi classics track director on the call. I don't go too deep on the Alien movie franchise either. I've seen the first movie and the second movie, and I think that's it. And I think I've only seen them like 1.5 times. But Joe, I know that you've done entire panels and programming around the Alien franchise down to Dragon Con, haven't you?
Lots and lots of panels about Alien. And at one point, we didn't successfully make this happen. I'm not giving up. At one point, Gary Mitchell, my co-director, and I were doing a zany sketch. And the whole point of the sketch was, it didn't matter how it ended because we were going to get an alien cosplayer to come in and kill us.
Oh.
And then we couldn't find him.
So oh, no.
Our friends Rita and JC Delatorre came in, and Rita as Voltron came in and attacked us both. And it was amazing.
That sounds epic.
We should end every panel with the entire panel just getting gunned down by some classic science fiction character. I remember Rita's costume. That was incredible.
It was excellent, but she couldn't really move a lot in it. So instead of like her swatting me down with her lion arm, I had to just run into it. And I did. And then I took the pratfall, ladies and gentlemen, and it was glorious.
Voltron's victims have to be very willing participants or this isn't going to work. I think the best ending to a panel for the Classics track that I was ever a part of was when we did The Incredible Hulk.
I was just going to say.
We did a panel on the Lou Ferrigno, Bill Bixby, 70s Incredible Hulk series. And at the end of the panel, we put on the sad ending Hulk walking away music. And everybody on the panel just got up and sadly, slowly walked off the stage and out the door.
Beautiful.
We trudged out the door with the music playing, and then every now and then one of us would just hold out his thumb.
Oh, yeah. And I stayed in character for the rest of the day. I was just out on the highway in Georgia somewhere, just hitchhiking.
That's good. Good call. Good call.
And that's how I got to Chickentown, where I am today. So it all worked out. Is there some kind of big celebration going on for the Alien franchise on this day?
No.
This is it? It's just down to the three of us to mark this occasion.
And I'm not even like, my heart's not even in this. I feel like talking about other aliens personally. Like, I would choose April 26th to celebrate Marvin the Martian from Looney Tunes. Yeah. Like, if it were up to me, or like maybe Little 12 Toes from Schoolhouse Rock.
Of course.
No offense to anyone who's a fan of the Aliens movie franchise.
Those aren't really cornflake style movies. I mean, those are horror movies.
True that.
It's horror dressed up as, outer space science fiction stuff. They're really good. It's a fine,
well-produced movies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But Alf's a little more my speed. So that's that's what I'll be celebrating on April 26th.
What if they'd used the Alf puppet in the Alien movies? It might not have been as effective, but we
would have. Wow, that would have been freaky.
They're going in slow motion down the hallway with their guns, and then up above them is like, "Hey, Willie!
I kill me." Yes.
And now I kill you.
There, we did it. We fixed the Alien franchise.
Yep.
And there's a cat in Alien, right?
Yes.
And isn't Alf like obsessed with cats?
Yes.
He's obsessed with eating cats.
So it would have actually made perfect sense to cast Alf as the alien.
That was a huge missed opportunity there.
Yep.
Speaking of missed opportunities, in the 90s, the movie American Pie, they named a type of person a MILF, and it became a thing. But I don't believe that they considered the fact of what that abbreviation now has to mean in pertaining to ALF.
Oh.
If MILFs exist and we already know ALF exists, come on, guys.
I'm picking up what you're throwing down, Joe.
Startling new meaning to the name Alf.
Yeah, and if that has stuck in your head and now that's all you can think of whenever you think of Alf, then you're welcome.
He's so fuzzy.
We took a beautiful, wholesome holiday like National Alien Day, and we've made it creepy and unsettling.
Yep. Yes, we fixed Aliens Day, and then we ruined Aliens Day because we are completists on this show.
Got to bring it around full circle.
We did it. All right, Cornflake. Good, nice, disturbing whatever day.
I'm never going to look at Alf the same way again.
I like it. All right, let's get back down here to Earth, and in fact, out to sea. On board the Pacific Princess, because last week, of course, we started our big Love Boat flop fight. Flop fight is the tournament game that we do occasionally here on the Flopcast, and Joe does Sci Fighters down at Dragon Con, a very similar panel in which we'll pick a theme, and then we will pick a bunch of contestants and just match them up and discuss who would win in a fight. And we ultimately will boil this down to a final winner for the Love Boat flop fight. This started last week, and there were many participants last week, and it all came down to our winner last week. Does anybody remember who won last week?
It was Vicky, wasn't it?
It was the captain's daughter, Vicky, yes.
And she won hard.
Oh, yeah. Vicky stormed through that tournament last week. like the angry, misunderstood little girl that she is. Which means Vicky advances to the finals this week. What we have to do is figure out right now who's going to ultimately fight Vicky. And the way this works, once again, is I've got a bunch of coffee mugs lined up next to me. One of them contains actual coffee, and I'm going to hopefully not reach in to that cup. That's for drinking, you know? The other three cups have little slips of paper in them. And from each of the first two mugs, I'm going to draw two names at random. So let's do this. For our opening pair, first I am drawing... Oh, this is good. We're starting with Gopher.
Oh!
Gopher, you say?
Gopher. Yikes. You know Gopher's first name? He had a first name. His first name was Burl. Like Burl Ives from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Burl Gopher Smith.
Did anyone ever call him Burl?
Occasionally. Very rarely.
Wow.
Did not hear that name often on the show, but once in a while it would come up. His name was Burl Gopher Smith.
Is that what they called him when he got in trouble? Like they used his full name? Now Burl Gopher Smith.
When the captain got angry enough, as he often did, because Gopher was kind of a goofball, he was your ship's purser, whatever that means. Anybody know what a purser is? What a purser does on a ship?
I'm going to look it up.
Look it up.
I haven't a clue.
Gopher was played by Fred Grandy.
Okay, a purser.
Yes.
Is an officer on a ship who keeps the accounts. Head steward on a passenger vessel. A ship's purser is the person on a ship responsible for handling the money.
Oh, no.
Gopher.
Because, you know, looking back, I never really saw Gopher doing anything. He'd just be hanging around, you know, yakking with the rest of the crew.
He orders supplies and... When they're at sea, how is anything gonna... There's no supplies. Gopher better make sure all the stuff is on board. Maybe that's why he stood around all the time. His job was done.
Yeah. He's just enjoying the cruise. He does all his work before we set sail. All right, who am I to judge then? I guess we can forgive Gopher for just hanging around doing nothing. He had nothing to do. That was his job. All right, that was Gopher. Now... There's one other big credit in the acting career of Gopher, of Fred Grandy. And Joe, I know you know all about this because you happen to be a professional podcaster on this very subject. And that is, we have to mention, Fred Grandy was the star of Monster Squad.
Yes.
Oh.
He was the star of Monster Squad in the 70s before Love Boat. It was a Saturday morning series created by... The people who did the Batman 66 TV series.
So this is to clarify for everybody, nothing to do with the 1980s Monster Squad movie.
Sadly, correct.
Completely unrelated, live action 1970s TV series. And just before Love Boat, he did Monster Squad. And it was he was like night watchman at a wax museum and the wax figures of the classic... monsters, Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman, they would come to life at night and he would direct them when they would go out and fight crime.
In a white panel van. And lots of questions. Why? The whole thing about them being wax figures, and again, I know far too much about this show because myself and John S. Drew, who runs the Batcave podcast. Now that they've gone through the entire Batman 66 series, they're doing series that are similar or with people who worked on those shows. And now we're into the Monster Squad. And luckily, there's not that many episodes. We're going to be done pretty soon. But luckily, I guess the Monster Squad ended because the Monster Squad aired the same year that Love Boat debuted. So Gopher went straight from the one thing right to the other thing.
Yeah, the timeline was very tight on his transition from Monster Squad to Love Boat. Just crazy. I also do a series of podcasts with John. John has me working with him, reviewing every episode of Electra Woman and Dinah Girl.
See?
And there's only 8 episodes, but we're really stretching this out.
Yeah, us too.
We've done like 3 episodes so far, I think, over the last 3 years or so.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a while.
I think we're in the same boat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. John's busy.
He really is.
I loved Monster Squad when I was a kid. I remember watching Monsters, but anything with monsters I was in, and it's because it was live action, it was so cool to have Saturday morning live action monsters. I loved it. That said, I do own the DVD set of the whole series today, and I can't say I've made it through the whole series on DVD. That seems like that'd be a bit of a challenge. But Joe's doing it, so we don't have to.
Yeah.
Excellent. So there's Fred Grandy. And right after Love Boat, Fred Grandy went into politics. Like, right off that boat, he became a U.S. congressman. An odd career trajectory for Fred Grandy.
He went into politics to turn that ship around.
It was Monster Squad, Love Boat, United States Congress.
Like you do.
All right, so that's Gopher. Let's see who Gopher is going up against today. I'm reaching into the second mug, and I have drawn... All right, I've drawn Emily Steubing. Who's that, you ask?
I have a hunch.
In the final season of Love Boat, Captain Steubing got married.
That's what I thought.
Emily Steubing was Mrs. Captain Steubing, and she was only there for, I think, 8 episodes. Only interesting because Emily Steubing was played by Marion Ross, as in Mrs. Cunningham from Happy Days.
What?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Mrs. Cunningham married Captain Steubing.
That's not appropriate. I do not. And Tom Bosley was a guest on the Love Boat like 12 times.
Several times.
And no, it wasn't 12 because we know the max was 10 and that was Florence
Henderson. Yeah. Yeah. Charo and Florence Henderson are tied for guest appearances at 10. Bosley made 5 appearances, I believe. I looked all this stuff up last week.
Join me and Kevin next week on Bosley Cast.
In fact,
I'd listen to that.
I can hit you with some Happy Days Love Boat stats right now. So taking Marion Ross off the table because she actually joined the cast for 8 episodes. The winner ahead of Bosley was Erin Moran, you know, who played little sister Joni.
Yeah.
She did 6 Love Boats. Tom Bosley did 5, actually tied with Donnie Most, also did 5. Then we've got Crystal Bernard.
Oh.
Who was on like those later season Happy Days. They brought in like another cousin. Ted McGinley wasn't enough. We're going to bring in yet another cousin. That was Crystal Bernard. She did 2 Love Boats. Pat Morita did 2 Love Boats. Al Molinaro did 1, and Kathy Silvers did 1. She was Jenny Piccolo.
Yes.
I'm surprised Anson Williams never showed up on the boat.
Potsy, man, he had a lot of stuff going on.
Come on, Potsy. Anyway, Emily Steubing, played by Marion Ross. It's also weird that this was the second Happy Days cast member to hop on board the Love Boat as a regular cast member, because we already had Ted McGinley on board as Ace the photographer, who
freaking McGinley
competed last week. All right, so anyway, we better get on with this. It's Gopher versus Mrs. Cunningham, also known as Emily Steubing. But we're still missing one piece of information, and that is, what is the exact nature of this competition? That's what my third and final coffee mug is here for. And I'm drawing now at random. The competition is Zamboni.
Okay.
Somebody's got to operate the Zamboni to clear the ice rink between Gopher and Mrs. Cunningham. I'm just going to call her Mrs. Cunningham because nobody knows the name Emily Steubing. Who'd be better operating a Zamboni?
I know who I want to watch operate a Zamboni. I want to watch Gopher do that.
Oh, interesting. See, I thought you were going to say you'd prefer watching Mrs. C.
I'm imagining a goofball running a Zamboni, and that is just comedy in my mind.
It's easy to imagine Gopher just being completely incompetent and, you know, swerving all over the place, just ripping up, making a complete disaster of the ice rink. And yet it would be fiercely entertaining.
Yes.
While on the other hand, I'm going to go with Gopher as well. But on the other hand, I think Mrs. C would try really hard.
Oh, yeah.
To pilot that Zamboni. She would do her best and eventually succeed. But it wouldn't be like no one would be killed. Like, there's a very strong possibility with Gopher driving the Zamboni. So,
and yet, morbidly, we would be very entertained by this hugely incompetent, dangerous Zamboni operator, Gopher.
I think maybe we can cover for ourselves here and presume that a Zamboni is difficult to operate in high heels and therefore give it to Gopher that way.
There we go. A lot.
What if the monster squad showed up and was chasing the Zamboni around the ice?
Oh, that's high comedy is what that is.
That is classic.
Yeah. Just run the whole thing, like speed up the film, you know, for comic effect.
I want to imagine Yakety Sax playing.
Yes, of course. Now, in Mrs. C's favor, if the Zamboni were to suffer any kind of mechanical breakdown, you know the Fonz would be there immediately 100%. To repair the thing.
Hey. Yeah.
But, so I think we're all in agreement. Mrs. Cunningham, you know, responsible, reliable. She'd do a better job. But we'd just rather watch Gopher.
Yeah. So,
All right. We're going with Gopher. Let's move on. I am drawing now. Our next contestant is... This is a weird one, but I put in a slip of paper for the Love Boat itself. The ship has entered the competition.
I'm so glad you did this, Kevin, because that boat was the star of the show.
It's the name of the show. It's the star of the show. Without this boat, there is no show. This is the Pacific Princess. This is the Love Boat stepping into the ring to compete in the flop fight.
I'm very excited.
Let's see who faces.
Let's see who has to take on a boat.
Someone's going to take on a giant cruise ship.
I am so glad it's not me.
And I have drawn, this is another lesser known Love Boat person, but remember last week we talked about the sequel series from the late 90s, Love Boat The Next Wave. Well, now we've got the captain of the ship on Love Boat The Next Wave, which was a whole different ship, by the way. It was called the Sun Princess.
But
yeah. They kind of ruined the theme music. Like, it's the same song, but it's just instrumental with a lot of steel drum going. It's rough.
Oh.
It's rough. Anyway, we have here Captain Jim Kennedy, the captain of the new Love Boat. And I only put him in because this is a recognizable actor. This was Robert Urich.
Now.
Was captain of the Love Boat.
I could be wrong, Kevin. I defer to you for this fact. Surely Robert Urich was a passenger on original Love Boat.
Yes, absolutely he was. So this is another case of, you know, that on Love Boat they would use the same actors again and again playing different characters. Yeah, Robert Urich certainly appeared in the original Love Boat series. Now he's the captain. Robert Urich was a mainstay of TV in the 70s and 80s. He was the star of SWAT. Then he was the star of Vegas.
It's Vega dollar sign.
Yes. V-E-G-A dollar sign. I stand corrected. And then in the 80s, Spencer for Hire.
Spencer.
I remember Spencer for Hire.
Well, for us around here, we're up in Massachusetts. Spencer for Hire was set in Boston and actually filmed in Boston.
Nice.
A few years before climbing aboard the Sun Princess. Robert Urich was married to Heather Menzies,
yes,
who I'm a fan of. And Heather was in the Logan's Run TV series. She was the girl in that. You know, Jenny Agutter was in the movie. And then Heather was in the TV version, which I like. I'm a fan of the Logan's Run TV series. She was also one of the Von Trapp children in The Sound of Music.
As was Nicholas Hammond, TV Spider-Man in the 70s.
Yes. And Angela Cartwright from Lost in Space.
TV's Angela Cartwright from
those Von Trapp kids just loaded with future science fiction and action stars. Incredible. And I remember on the original Love Boat series, they actually appeared in an episode together, Robert Urich and his wife, Heather Menzies.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So we like Robert Urich, but he's about to do battle with an entire cruise ship.
Now, we already know he can captain the Sun Princess, but... When you say Love Boat, my assumption is Pacific Princess.
Right, yeah. He's going up against the real boat from the original series right now. Now, here's where the Love Boat may be at a disadvantage. We have no idea what the competition is. Let's find out. I'm going into the mug. The competition is the Easter Bunny.
What?
Which would make a better Easter Bunny?
Yes.
The boat or Robert Urich?
All right.
The Love Bunny boat.
Let's look at pounds per square inch of egg delivery. How many? Now, Robert Urich is a very strong man. He's a strapping 70s man.
Yeah, man, those 70s guys were a lot beefier.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't like perfect physical specimens. You could pack on an extra 40 pounds and be a 70s leading action star. It was fine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you grow some big sideburns, a big mustache.
Yes, this is if you were a guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. We're not saying it was fair or right.
So he could carry a lot of Easter baskets as the Easter Bunny. He could deliver a lot, but the Pacific Princess, we've got an entire hold, a cargo hold, a cruise ship size supply area. There's lots of egg delivery and chocolate bunny delivery.
The Love Boat pulls into the dock and they could like lower down one of the lifeboats just loaded with eggs at each stop.
Yep.
You're all thinking about this very logically, you two.
Are we?
I am just picturing a giant boat with bunny ears, and that's doing it for me. I'm sold on the boat winning this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Needless to say, giant ears and tail will be affixed to the Love Boat.
That's all I need in this world. I mean, that just wins me over right there. That and you, the fact that you could call it the Love Bunny Boat makes me happy.
Yeah.
All right. I think this is an easy win for the boat.
I never thought I'd appreciate a boat as a rabbit, but there you go.
All right. Robert Urich is out. Spencer is no longer for hire. We must move on.
With the Love Bunny Boat.
Next, I have drawn your cruise director, the original, Julie McCoy.
Julie McCoy.
Last week we did her replacement character, Judy McCoy.
The Coy and Vance Duke all in one person.
Yes. All right, Julie. Julie McCoy, played by Lauren Tews. I don't know her from very much outside The Love Boat. This was really the big role of her acting career. I did see her in one other thing. Just two years ago, I happened to see this movie from 1981. So this would have been like right in the middle of the Love Boat era. She starred in a movie called Eyes of a Stranger. And this was just sort of a cheap horror slasher movie. There's like a serial killer. And she played like a newscaster who was investigating. And then the guy was coming after her or whatever, you know. Not bad, as this type of movie goes. It held my interest. It was pretty good. I enjoyed watching my cruise director in a horror film for a change. That was fun. And the only interesting thing about this movie, other than the presence of Julie McCoy, is that her little sister in this movie was played by, in her film debut, it was Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah, look at that.
Probably the only reason anybody remembers this movie. But we know it because of Lauren Tews, Julie McCoy, there she was. And let's see who Julie will be facing. I go to mug number two, and Julie's competition is... All right, well, this is a battle of the ladies right now, I think, because we have Kim, as in Kim Carlisle. This is another mostly forgotten Love Boat crew member. She only appeared in, I think, 7 episodes. This was around 1984-85. Kim Carlisle, she was an intern working on the ship, and she was kind of incompetent. The premise of that episode was they kept putting her in different jobs, and it was always a disaster.
Sure.
And then at the end of the episode, she's doing like aerobics, you know, because it's the 80s. And yep. It turns out that's what she's great at, is fitness.
Oh.
And they say, Kim, we're putting you in charge of fitness programs. So that was the happy ending of the story. And then she was around for a handful of episodes after that. That was Kim. Everybody forgot. The interesting thing about Kim is that she was played by Michelle Johnson. And I immediately recognized Michelle Johnson from the pretty horrifying 1984 movie Blame It on Rio.
See?
This is the girl from Blame It on Rio. Which is a horrible, inappropriate movie.
Yeah.
That's why... Back in the 80s, when it would come on HBO every 15 minutes, I only watched Blame It on Rio 13,000 times. And then I stopped because it's not a good movie. But this was, you know, Michael Caine and Demi Moore and Michelle Johnson. That was her big role. And right around the same time, there she was on the Love Boat doing aerobics. Maybe she did some water aerobics, Cornflake. I don't know.
I was wondering if she did water aerobics, but now I'm just regretting that we're not going to get to see her in this tournament driving a Zamboni, because that's already been drawn.
You want to see her with the Zamboni?
Yeah. If everything she does is a disaster, she could give Gopher a run for her money, wouldn't you say?
That's right. She would have been equally incompetent as Gopher behind the wheel of the Zamboni. All right. So we have Julie versus Kim. Let's see what they're doing.
Aerobics now.
It better not be aerobics. Poor Julie. Be knocked out right away. The competition is kangaroo.
That's not unlike aerobics.
I don't mean the video game.
Oh, now see.
This means literally, and I love the video game. I'm a big fan of the classic video game kangaroo. But what we mean here is you're a kangaroo.
Dang.
Julie or Kim, competition, kangaroo. Or kangaroo. I like to emphasize the first syllable because that's how Bruce Willis's girlfriend says it in Pulp Fiction. So I tend to say kangaroo, but I'm weird. What do you think? Julie versus Kim.
This is tough because Kim, fitness. I feel like she could do the jumping, the boxing.
Yep.
But you got to look at experience, I think.
Who doesn't want their cruise director to be a kangaroo?
Yeah, I'm saying even as a kangaroo.
I see what you're saying, Joe, but I fear that there's an obvious alliteration angle to consider. There's like Kim Kangaroo just kind of rolls off the tongue.
That's solid gold. I agree.
So that makes it, I just made things harder. I'm just going to be quiet over here.
Well, no, I think that's a fine point. And yeah, the whole aerobic fitness aspect is really hard to deny. With all the jumping and punching and whatnot. I love that screen in the video game. I think it's the third screen where there's just a stack of monkeys holding up the baby kangaroo in a cage.
Yep.
You know, and the mother kangaroo is just standing at the bottom of the pile of monkeys, just punching them out one at a time until the cage drops down to the bottom.
Love it.
That's how we were entertained back in the day.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, man, I love Julie. I love Lawrence Hughes as the cruise director. I feel like this might be one of those upset scenarios where we've handed Blame It on Rio's Michelle Johnson a competition where she would excel hopping around like a kangaroo.
Wow.
Stunned.
I think that's where I'm leaning. But Joe, can you go with us on Kim? Or do you want to present more of a defense for Julie?
I feel like, Julie, you got to count years of experience. Now, it's not years of experience as a kangaroo.
No.
Yeah, because none of us have that unless we are a kangaroo.
Unless we are kangaroos.
She doesn't have a pouch.
No.
All she has is a clipboard. All she has is her clipboard that says, oh, you're staying on the Aloha deck. That doesn't help you as a kangaroo.
I'm going to have to. Yeah, I think we got to.
This is tough. It's tough. We love Julie.
I feel like much like cocaine knocked Lawrence Hughes off the show, I think Kim the kangaroo is going to have to knock Julie out of the competition.
Oh, what a horrifying way to put it. But
she's okay.
She's okay.
In fact, she came back to the show after surviving her.
Yes.
I'm just going with the TV Guide stories from the time.
She got better. She came back. She's great.
Yeah.
We love Lauren Twos, but I think we got to hand this to Kim the kangaroo.
Beautiful.
Shocking upset. A shocking upset. And I think we're down to just one last matchup for our opening rounds. And I think this is going to get weird, my friends, because I remember what the last two names are. And for one thing, this should be no surprise that the final name I've drawn out of mug number one is Isaac.
Oh, the bartender.
We have not gotten to Isaac yet. This is the final member of our classic crew to appear in the competition, Isaac the bartender, of course, played by Ted Lang. Man, he was terrific. You know, just lit up the screen. Did a lot of other stuff as well. I saw him just recently. I was watching another weird old movie happened to come on. It was Friday Foster.
Mm.
That's a Pam Grier movie from the 70s. One of those 70s blaxploitation movies. You know, a fun movie. Just one of those crazy action 70s things. The cast is crazy. Ted Lang is in it. He plays a pimp. He's really funny. But Everybody was in this movie. Eartha Kitt is in it. Jim Backus from Gilligan's Island shows up at one point. Fun movie, Friday Foster. Ted also was one of the stars of a sitcom that lasted like half a season right before The Love Boat. There was a show called Mr. T and Tina.
Man.
Remember this thing? I'm fascinated by the show. I've never seen it. I gotta look it up, see if it's on YouTube. Hopefully it is. Mr. T and Tina. This has nothing to do with Mr. T, the one that we know.
Which is ridiculous.
This is, you know, several years before Mr. T would emerge as a celebrity in the 80s. 1975. It starred Pat Morita.
Oh, okay.
Pat Morita was the Mr. T of the title.
Weird.
Yeah, and it was Pat Morita. He was an inventor from Japan. He comes to America. And then Tina was the live-in nanny.
So you're telling me that Mr. Miyagi used to be Mr. T?
Yes.
Yep. I like it.
It's all coming together. Oh. I know we've talked about this before, but every sitcom in the 70s and 80s, there's always a maid or a butler. Or, you know, every middle-class family back then had live-in servants.
I was led to believe that servants and butlers were far more present and common.
Yes.
Than they ended up actually be.
My whole life growing up, every time I turn on the TV, it's just a parade of maids and butlers and nannies. And in my whole life in the real world, I don't think I've ever seen, outside a hotel, I've never seen a maid. and I've never seen a butler anywhere.
I feel like we may be, I think this may be the genesis of another flop fight with just
oh
the butlers, the maid.
Oh, that's a fantastic idea. All right, Joe, we have to bring you back. That's going to happen. That's a wonderful idea.
I like how you think, Joe.
Yes.
I've been on the show an episode and a half, and already we're on the same wavelength.
Well, as we mentioned last week, we were sort of completely out of ideas, so it really helps when anybody pitches us anything.
Good.
Oh, we'll do it. All right, Ted was in Mr. T and Tina, again, a bizarre little short-lived sitcom. And the last time I actually saw him in anything was on Marin, Mark Maron's show a few years ago. He actually played himself in one episode of Marin, which was fun. Ted actually was a guest just a few weeks ago, right here on the ESO Network. He was interviewed on Earth Station 1.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which was great. They had a great time talking with Ted.
So inadvertently, we're promoting the other shows on the network.
We're cross-promoting everyone and everything. So, yeah, a fan favorite, certainly. Here is Isaac the Bartender. And hang on, because now it's going to get weird. I already remember what's in the final mug.
Do tell.
Kids, Isaac is facing. I love that this happened. Again, I was drawing these names at random. Isaac is going up against Robot Isaac.
No way.
We talked about this last year because I happened to see this episode of Love Boat last year. And on the show that week, I was like, Cornflake, I just saw the best episode of the Love Boat ever. And we talked all about this. And the whole show was just bizarre, even beyond the Robot Isaac storyline. Jack Klugman was also a guest on Love Boat. His story was Jack Klugman, you know, from The Odd Couple and Quincy. He was considering getting a nose job.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Susanna York, you know, who was Superman's mother on Krypton in the Chris Reeve movies, it was a wacky misunderstanding. She thought that Jack Klugman was not looking into getting a nose job, but was considering like gender reassignment surgery.
Oh, yeah, I remember this now.
Yeah, that was an actual plot on The Love Boat. Just crazy.
I have no words.
So that's happening. Meanwhile, in another part of the ship, Telly Savalas and Janet Jackson are robbers, and part of their scheme to pull off a big robbery is they have built Robot Isaac. They've built a perfect robot duplicate of Isaac the Bartender.
I love it.
It's the greatest thing that ever happened. And actually, when Ted Lang was on Earth Station 1 of just a few weeks ago, they talked about this episode. And Ted said that Janet Jackson was 17 when shooting started. And her 18th birthday happened during the shooting of this episode. and Ted had a kissing scene with her.
Oh.
So they intentionally, they made sure that they arranged the shooting schedule.
Oh, good Lord. So,
they scheduled the kiss for after her 18th birthday.
Oh, good Lord.
Just so it'd be a little less weird.
A little less.
A little. There's a delightful Love Boat behind the scenes story for you, which Ted shared right here on the ESO network.
Wow.
Well, here we go anyway. It's Isaac versus Robot Isaac. Again, I swear this was chosen completely at random. Let's see what they're doing. The competition is Mandrell Sister.
Okay.
This is, you know, country star Barbara Mandrell and the Mandrell Sisters.
Oh.
This, I was inspired to include this because they had their own TV series. They had a variety show.
Yep.
At the same time, in the early 80s, it was, I would watch it on Saturday night before the Love Boat. So the competition is, you have to be a Mandrell sister.
Not to be confused with a Mandrill sister, which is originally what I thought you meant.
Monkeys.
Like an ape?
Yeah, well, I mean, you had somebody be a kangaroo earlier. It's not that far-fetched.
That's a good point. Mandrill sister.
I know it sounds silly, but that is totally what I thought you meant, Kevin, when you said that.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we clarified that for you.
Isn't the saying, be a monkey's uncle, not a monkey sister? What are we talking about?
That was the worst. When I was in grade school, the worst insult you could hurl at somebody was that they were a Mandrill's sister. Yeah. But in this case, this is Barbara Mandrell, and her sisters were Louise and Earlene, and they would sing their big country hit songs every week, as well as perform various really stupid comedy sketches. There were puppets on the show with them because it was produced by Sid and Marty Croft.
Yep.
That was Barbara Mandrell and the Mandrell sisters. Who would make a better Mandrell sister, Isaac or Robot Isaac? How's this going to go? It's a question that's been asked time and again over the years. I know.
We're answering the immortal questions tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, it's sort of a cliche. Every podcast has this exact same debate at one time or another.
Like, look, fine, we'll do it too.
My response to this, it would be, why not both? But I think the obvious answer to that question is, this is a tournament, you can't have both. In an ideal world, I would have both, though, Kevin.
Yeah, in our hearts, we love Isaac and we love Robot Isaac.
I want to go with the real deal, flesh and blood Isaac.
It could come down to as simple a matter as you've got to be able to sing, you know, and do some singing and dancing.
Yeah.
I feel like Isaac as a human being has that advantage over the robot Isaac, who, as I recall, behaved rather robotically.
Good point.
Yeah, he doesn't have the pizzazz.
Yeah, like if Barbara Mandrell was like a techno electronica kind of act, then I could see maybe Robot Isaac, you know, joining the act.
But no.
But this is country music. And when you think of country music, don't you think of Isaac the bartender and Ted Lang?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, you do. I think we got to go Isaac. I hate to knock a robot out of the competition because we love robots.
Sure.
But this is Isaac. All right, Isaac advances. That takes care of all of our opening matches. So now we've got to start pitting these winners against each other. And we're starting with Gopher versus the Love Boat.
Oh, wow. Pull up a chair, get yourself some popcorn for this one.
He's in charge of putting all the supplies on this boat. He's the purser. He's in charge of all the money on the boat.
He's the purser, and she's the boat.
Do you think the Love Boat itself secretly hates Gopher?
100%. Yeah.
If we're going to look at the Love Boat as a sentient being somehow, wouldn't it just be filled with rage?
Yeah.
She probably blames the purser for that new pair of bunny ears she's rocking, so.
Yeah, the poor boat is dressed like the Easter Bunny at this point.
Yeah, and really, you got the feeling that the other humans on the boat barely tolerated Gopher.
Yes, yeah. Not beloved amongst his fellow humans. Absolutely despised by the ship.
You never saw anybody hanging out when they were off duty with Gopher.
Never. Why would you? All right, let's see what they're doing. The competition between Gopher and the Love Boat is... Oh, man. All right. Remember last week we had, as a competition, Mr. Rourke?
Yep.
as in you had to replace Ricardo Montalban, Mr. Rourke on Fantasy Island, which was the show that came on right after Love Boat every week. This competition is assistant to Mr. Rourke. This is the tattoo position.
Oh.
Assistant on Fantasy Island is going to be either Gopher or the Love Boat.
I think the Love Boat's got this all the way, because the Love Boat can get the passengers there, no problem. In fact, has done so already.
Yes. Wow, you're right. They did one or two crossover episodes. The Love Boat dropped off passengers at Fantasy Island, and then their story continued on Fantasy Island.
Yeah, in the Love Boat cinematic universe, or the LBCU, Fantasy Island exists.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And Charlie's Angels as well.
And Charlie's Angels.
They also did a crossover episode with Charlie's Angels.
So all three of those are within the LBCU.
If the Love Boat was the assistant to Mr. Rourke, they would no longer need the plane.
Nope.
It would just be the Love Boat.
How efficient.
It would scream out for itself as it approached the island.
That's what I do when I approach an island. I don't know about you.
And Tattoo, instead of saying his classic catchphrase, Tattoo would go, "Hey, boss, the jamboat, she's coming." Honestly, any opportunity I can to do a fairly adequate Tattoo impression, I'm going for it.
Everybody knows you do the best Hervé Villechaize impression in the business. That's why you're here. Nicely done. Of course, if he said that, then Mr. Rourke would reply with Tattoo, "Why are you still here? You've been replaced by the Love Boat. That's my assistant now."
Tattoo. It's Tattoo, not Tattoo. It's, yeah. Mr. Rourke pronounces it correctly.
It's pronounced kangaroo and Tattoo.
Tattoo, exactly.
All right. I can't imagine Mr. Rourke putting up with Gopher as an assistant.
No.
Good point.
That's ridiculous. All right. I think we're going Love Boat.
Yep.
The Love Boat advances. Okay. Over Gopher. Now, the next match of opening round winners to face off now, we have Kim. Blame it on Rio's Michelle Johnson. Kim, the fitness instructor on the Love Boat for just a handful of episodes, now, of course, must face Isaac, the bartender.
Yikes.
Now, this seems like such a ridiculous, lopsided competition. However, you know, Kim just took out Julie McCoy.
Yes.
You know, she's proven herself a worthy kind of Cinderella story in this flop fight. We don't know how far she could turn out to go.
And you might draw running a spin class from one of those cups.
That could be. Isaac doesn't know how to get on a spin bike. That'd be a disaster. His mustache would get all caught up in the pedals somehow.
Ooh, that sounds so painful.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Believe me. All right. The competition I'm drawing now is making fancy patterns in cups of cappuccino. All right. You know, you get your little cup of cappuccino or latte or whatever, and some of your baristas will know how to make a little fancy swirly thing in the top of the cup. I don't know how they do that. Could you do that, Cornflake? You're something of a coffee aficionado.
I haven't practiced as of late. I think I could probably get back to it. There was a time where I could do that.
You could do that, really? You've done that?
Yeah, nothing fancy like a leaf, you know.
A leaf is something. I couldn't draw a leaf in a cup of coffee. I'm impressed by that.
Thank you. It's been a while.
You used to come here every week back in the before times. You'd be here every week. We'd be drinking coffee together. I never saw you draw a leaf in your coffee.
So I had important business to attend to. I was flop showing. So.
But on the other hand, I never handed you a cappuccino either. It's hard to draw a leaf in a cup of black coffee. And that's all I ever gave you.
Just imagine the leaf, you know?
Yeah. I should have offered fancier beverages and then just sat back and watched the magic.
Well, if you could go back and do it all again, Kevin.
Yeah, someday. Joe, can you make fancy patterns in cups of cappuccino?
I cannot.
There's no shame in that, Joe.
Between the two of them, though, I must say Isaac, because he already has the mixology skill.
Yeah, you know.
You have to give this to Isaac.
Fantastic point. This is a luck of the draw scenario in that we are right in his expertise. Absolutely. He's a bartender. He works with beverages all day on that ship. And yeah, I don't recall Isaac dealing with a lot of coffee beverages, but come on. He's a beverage professional. He is a mixologist, as Joe puts it.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, Michelle Johnson from Blame It on Rio, she already went deeper in this thing than I thought she possibly could, but she's met her match and then some. Come on, we're making coffee with Isaac.
Because he's got to know how to prep the coffee after a long night of cruise ship binge drinking for everyone.
Oh, yeah, man. There must have been some zonked out, hungover 1970s celebrities desperately in need of coffee every morning on that stupid ship.
Quick, Tom Bosley.
Oh.
Tom Bosley is three sheets to the wind and it's 4 a.m. Isaac.
Don Knotts is face down on the deck. Just splash the whole pot of coffee right over his stupid head. Come on.
Yeah, I really, if Isaac is whipping up a drink for me, I don't care what the decoration is on it. I just want him to slip some Baileys in that.
Yeah, you know that Isaac would take care of you as well. You know, here's your coffee. And then he winks.
Wink, wink.
So true.
All right. Isaac obviously advances. So we're up to the semifinal round now. This will determine who's going to face the captain's daughter, Vicky. And obviously, this has come down to Isaac the bartender versus the love boat. Yikes. Here we go. I'm drawing the competition now, and I have drawn Wonder Woman.
Oh.
Who's going to be Wonder Woman? Isaac or the love boat?
We already know the boat can dress up as other characters.
We've seen the love boat as the Easter Bunny. Can the love boat turn invisible? Because that's how she gets around.
I'm going to say probably.
It probably can. Now, Isaac could probably do the spin, you know, the Linda Carter spin.
Oh, yeah.
To make the transfer. We've seen him do the, you know, the double pointing at the camera with the big smile, you know. He knows how to do that kind of signature move for his character. I'll bet he could do a mean Wonder Woman spin. Whereas the love boat, that's a giant, slow-moving vessel.
Yep.
Have a hard time really doing a proper Wonder Woman spin to get that burst of light and transform into Wonder Woman.
Might create a whirlpool trying.
See?
It would be a nautical disaster.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah. I feel like I'm kind of leaning towards Isaac.
I'm leaning Isaac as well.
We've seen him wear the red. You know, she wears the old red, white, and blue.
Sure.
Or gold, or whatever. The song says red, white, and blue. But and Isaac wears that sharp red jacket. Looks fantastic.
I'm leaning Love Bunny Wonder Boat, but I think really? I just got outvoted.
All right, Cornflakes going Love Boat. I feel like Joe and I are going, we're leaning more towards Isaac.
Yes.
Can you come around to us, Cornflake?
Well, I'll always have the Love Bunny Wonder Boat in my mind, so...
Nothing can take away from that boat the fact that it was the greatest Easter Bunny in the history of Easter.
Yes.
It just cannot stack up against Isaac when it comes to being, a, you know, a super friend.
So true.
All right. We're handing the Wonder Woman competition to Isaac the bartender, which means...
Isaac the Wonder Bartender.
Yes. Your final round in the Love Boat flop fight is there's a couple of classic Love Boat crew members, and it's Isaac the bartender versus Vicky the captain's daughter, our winner from week one.
Now, this is the fight we paid to come and see.
Yep. Main event.
This is a good one. It would not be an upset for either one of them to win. There's one competition remaining. I don't remember what it is, but we're all about to find out as I reach into the mug. And I have drawn our final competition. Wow, this is a weird, stupid competition.
Weirder than being a kangaroo?
If only a better competition had made it to the final. But this is what I've drawn. The competition is maple syrup, by which I had in mind up here in New England. You know, we tap the maple trees.
Oh, yeah. I've got neighbors that do that, actually.
Up around your house, they're making maple syrup?
Yes, they are.
Wow. Is it like the super old-fashioned way where it's just like a metal bucket nailed to the side of the tree?
Yeah, buckets and...
That's the old-timey way. Is it? Yeah, the bucket. But then I've seen these more modern versions where it looks like some kind of a cyborg science fiction experiment with all sorts of cables and cords running all through the trees, like this bionic maple tree. That's what they do up here, though, Joe. They don't make maple syrup down in Alabama, do they?
They actually do.
Do they?
They... I don't know how they make it. I just know that my granddad would just open up the jar and just pour it all over everything at breakfast.
Your grandfather made his own maple syrup?
Probably.
Like from tapping maple trees in Alabama?
I'm going to say yes.
Is there any chance he was just hiding in the basement? He had a case of Mrs. Butterworth?
That's very possible. Well, all right, Joe, I'm going to go out and tap the maple tree.
Yeah, I'm going to go get my secret special homemade.
The well-known Alabama maple. And then he comes back with nicely sugared maple syrup. No, I don't know.
All right, so we're talking Isaac versus the captain's daughter, Vicky, maple syrup. This is tricky. We're sort of in a beverage adjacent area in the world of maple syrup. And again, that's Isaac's business.
Yes, it's a consumable.
It sure is. It's probably an ingredient in some freaky 1970s mixed drink.
Also an ingredient in the espresso martinis that I make.
Oh, look at that.
You make an espresso martini with maple syrup in it?
Just a little, yeah.
Wow.
See, you've been missing out since
having in-person meetings with Cornflake. I've got to tell you, people. And now, all of a sudden, way more than ever before. I just learned I've been missing out on espresso maple martinis. All right, now poor Vicky. We've established Vicky was a little girl. She arrived on the Love Boat. She grew up on a cruise ship. She's had no formal education. They don't have any maple trees on the Pacific Princess that I ever saw.
She's just going to whack a tree with that clipboard and see if some syrup comes out.
The Love Boat has made zero stops in New Hampshire. And all the voyages that it's ever gone on, they stop in like Acapulco and Puerto Vallarta. And those areas are not known particularly for their maple syrup, as I recall. So I feel like she's had little to no exposure to the world of maple syrup production. Man, I thought she was going to take this thing, Cornflake. I was with you if I had to guess.
Yeah.
But we're in the maple syrup business now.
Yeah.
Maple syrup, like always, changes everything.
It changes everything. Yeah. Now, if this had been the Isaac robot, I probably would have gone to Vicky because, you know, if a robot spills a little bit of maple syrup on itself, it's all over. It'd be sparks and smoke and it'd get all stuffed up with maple syrup and it would just collapse.
Yeah, it would go like bleep, blorp, and then.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be hilarious. I'd love to watch a robot filled with maple syrup exploding. But
my number one reaction when I drop syrup on me is bleep, blorp. I might be part robot.
I've heard you say that many times. I've been out to breakfast with you. And yeah, that's what you say as you spill maple syrup all over yourself, as you always do.
Aw, bleep, blorp.
That's your move. Well, I feel like we've got to cut poor Vicky loose at this point. And I mean, it's sad that we're losing Vicky, but I think a happy occasion and that we can congratulate your flop fight winner. It looks like it's come down to Isaac the bartender.
Of course it did.
Of course it was always going to end like this.
It was inevitable, I suppose.
Isaac the bartender was always end game.
It was always good. The end game was always going to be Isaac and Vicky.
I think this played out perfectly. Great job, my friends. By the way, we've been sitting on a Love Boat script for a couple of years now. Remember the Love Boat script we have, Cornflake? Yes,
it still needs a good dramatic reading.
I have it right here. I'm holding it right now. Joe, a couple of years ago, we received a mystery package here at the studio. It was from Ed, my partner in my old band, the Sponge Awareness Foundation, mailed us a package. We opened it on the air. I had no idea what was inside it. We opened it up. It was What's in the Bag. And it was an actual original script from the Love Boat from 1983. And it's autographed by the entire cast.
What?
The front cover of the script. Everybody signed it. Your whole classic Love Boat cast.
That is a treasure.
Gavin McLeod wrote Blue Skies and Calm Seas from all of us on the Love Boat. Gavin McLeod. And inside like the circle part of the letter G in Gavin, he drew a happy face.
Man.
I have done that with all of my G's ever since I saw that Gavin did it.
It's beautiful. The second best signature on this is from Jill Whelan, who played Vicky, because she drew a little heart over her name.
Mm.
It's really beautiful.
I say that we turn the flop cast at this point into the Love Boat cast and do a dramatic reading of this whole script.
Yeah, we've been threatening to do something with this script, and we haven't quite figured out how we're going to handle this, but at some point we're going to seriously dive into the script, because it's fantastic. Joe, the guest on this episode, Carol Channing. Two Golden Girls were on this episode. Rue McClanahan and Betty White were on board. Michelle Phillips from The Mamas and the Papas. Cesar Romero.
Joker and half of the Golden Girls?
Yes. Alan Thicke was there. Dick Van Patten and Fred Willard.
Fred Willard.
All in this one magical episode. And we have the original script for it here. Anyway, we couldn't get through a whole Love Boat tournament without mentioning that, yes, we still have the script here. We love it. And we're going to figure out what to do with it. Maybe we'll read a piece of it at some point.
That'd be glorious.
That's what the people deserve.
I want dibs on playing Carol Channing.
Oh, you better believe Joe is going to be part of the Love Boat script reading. Yes, yes, yes. I don't think we'll do the whole thing, but I'll go through it and pick out, you know, what would be a good excerpt. And then maybe we'll do that. But for now, let's start wrapping this thing up. Before we wrap up the whole show with Cornflakes, plugs and links and whatnot, Joe, why don't you tell everybody what you're up to, where we can find you and all your Classics Track antics.
Here's what you do. Do this. Go onto the interwebs. Go to facebook.com/groups/American Sci-Fi Classics, and we talk about this kind of thing all the time, not just during Dragon Con times. And speaking of that, now, since the pandemic, and really before the pandemic happened last year, we have been doing every Thursday, Kevin and Cornflake have been a part of this. We've been doing live panels, much like you might see at a real life in-person convention. We've been showcasing the awesomeness of nerdiness and Dragon Conniness every week on YouTube and on our Facebook with the American Sci-Fi Classics quarantine panels. And we're always looking for more guests. We're always looking for pals of ours to drag them on board, much like the Love Boat. Every week we have a different selection of guests. And myself and Gary Mitchell, your cruise director, we welcome you aboard every Thursday night.
Come aboard. We're expecting you.
We are. And if you don't show, you're in trouble.
These are crazy fun, these online Classics Track panels. Yeah, every Thursday night.
Such a good time.
And then if you can't make it Thursday night, which, by the way, why can't you make it? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Of course you can make it.
Seriously.
But then they're archived afterwards on your YouTube channel, though, so you can even go back and watch all the old ones are there. So we will have links with this episode to the American Sci-Fi Classics Track Facebook page and to the Classics Track YouTube channel. So you're a click away from all the Classics Track fun. So absolutely join us for that. Cornflake, why don't you wrap up our little show here? Get us out of here.
Sure thing. All right. Thanks again, Joe, for joining us.
I'm so happy to have done this, and thank you guys both.
You can find us at flopcast.net or on facebook.com/flopcast. On Twitter, we are at Flopcast. On Instagram, we are the_Flopcast. On Apple Podcasts, you could leave us a rating or a review. In fact, we suggest you do this highly. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
It was performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation. Starting next week, it will be performed by the Mandrell Sisters featuring Isaac. Cornflake, thanks for joining me once again. Joe, yeah, as Cornflake said, thanks so much for joining us here on the Flopcast, finally, and we will have you back on before too long, maybe to do another flop fight featuring butlers and maids and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love that idea. Meanwhile, everybody, thanks for listening to us. And, man, this has been a week, you know, so little good news from the courtrooms came out today as we record this, so that was nice. Meanwhile, please remember George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, so many names. Be kind, be safe. Black Lives Matter. We're thinking of you, but we hope you can also hang out with us and be goofy as well. See you next week.
Peace and cookies. And love bunny boats.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmos Show and the PCC Multiverse.
People are just losing their minds trying to consume Marvel products right now, and I don't blame them. This is some of the best entertainment you can get on TV and big screen right now.
If something's going to be successful or not, they look at the mentions, they look at the likes, they look at the retweets and the tweets and the subtweets and the tweet tweets, and they look at all of that to say, okay, this is actually going to garner a lot of attention.
Catch our shows on Worldwide Radio 7 days a week and right here on the ESO Network.
And okay, kids, it's the secret after show, which means nobody's listening. We may speak freely.
Okay.
And here you have my espresso martini recipe. No, I'm just kidding.
You're serving drinks for the after show?
Yeah, they're going to wish they listened.
Well, if you have nothing, I have something.
What you got for the after show, Joe?
I have the plot of the reunion episode of Love Boat the Next Wave, wherein the original cast returned.
Yes, I remember watching this episode at the time. I was so excited that the original cast was returning to be guests on Love Boat the Next Wave.
Most of the original cast, because yeah. Gopher is mentioned, not explained why he's not there.
Yeah. The reason was he was in Congress.
Yeah. So the original crew visits the new ship for Vicky to get married. Captain Steubing, who is still married to his, we're assuming, Emily, he is the vice president of Princess Cruises, and he is anxiously awaiting word of whether he will become the president. Meanwhile, Captain Steubing tours the ship and talks smack about the Sun Princess, because it's no Pacific Princess.
Nope.
And Vicky gets cold feet about the marriage.
Of course she does.
Meanwhile, Isaac, our winner today, Isaac relates to somebody named Paolo. I don't know who he is on the next wave, that he has been unable to maintain a long-term relationship.
Wow.
Meanwhile, Captain Steubing finds out that he has been promoted, so that's his happy ending. Isaac meets a lady, and they eventually fall in love. This is in one episode.
Wow.
Yeah, things happen fast on the Love Boat.
Yes. Vicky confronts her intended, Bill, and insults Vicky several times. So she, anyway, I'm assuming, kills him.
Yeah.
And because we've established Vicky is hot, tough as nails. And then Julie overhears Doc saying that he had secretly been in love with a coworker during his time on the Pacific Princess, and that coworker was Julie herself.
Oh.
And then Julie and Doc declare their mutual love for each other.
Oh, that's weird.
Yup.
Wow.
But the big closer for this plot description, I believe you during the show said that most of the cast members of Happy Days guest starred on Love Boat, except for a certain few. Well, the director of this reunion episode.
Oh, no.
Anson Williams.
Yes. Oh, that's beautiful.
Potsy himself.
Look at that. What a Love Boat miracle this has turned into. We were just in the main show, we were mourning the absence of Potsy.
Clearly, the spirit of Potsy compelled the reunion show to be super weird and uncomfortable.
Amazing.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.